This is Countless Screaming Argonauts, show number 12 for the week of February 8th, 2008. Baby, check this out. Welcome to Countless Screaming Argonauts. We're two guys talking to anyone about everything. We're being produced by 8 Beer Sampler Productions for internet consumption. I'm the Penguin. This is my co-host, Max.
I'm Max.
And we are, again, flying solo. We have no technical support whatsoever.
And it shows.
And it's showing. It's showing big time.
But we're doing okay. We got a good connection. We got good sound. And other than our own particular limitations, we're doing good.
Well, see, that's easy for you to say because you don't have to listen to Booth Boy berate me when we're done. I caught shit for last week's show because it was too long, because it was in three parts, because he didn't like this, he didn't like that. We spent too much time on some things, not enough time on another. I got the whole rundown.
Well, you can blame the duration of it on me because I pushed to continue on. I don't remember now what we said, but I'm sure that I thought we were rolling and should keep rolling.
I agree with you 100%.
So, Booth Boy,
that it's your fault.
Yeah.
That's the part I agree with.
Entirely.
Well, we've got a bunch of political stuff to talk about tonight.
And why not? It's the week of and after Super Tuesday.
Super Tuesday. So this is sort of like we had the Super Bowl extravaganza. This would be the Super Tuesday extravaganza. Although Booth Boy, even though he's not here, is cringing right now because whenever we say extravaganza, we go long.
I hadn't thought about that, but it's true.
We did it at Thanksgiving. We did it for the Super Bowl, and now we're doing it here. So tough. Get over it.
All right.
Well, where do you want to start?
Well... How about with yesterday's Little Oops by David Schuster?
Sure. Go for it.
All right. I don't think I'm going to read this whole thing, but it's noteworthy, and it refers to a subject line that's come up before. Yesterday on the Tucker Show, yesterday being February 7th, I guess, David Schuster... probably trying to quip with some other potentates or fancy politician commentators.
Some other talking head.
Some other talking head said, quote, and this quote is from the San Francisco Chronicle blog called, well, I'll leave the title of the blog. Doesn't it seem like Chelsea's sort of being pimped out in some weird sort of way? And this author, who I assume writes for the San Francisco Chronicle, Joe Garofoli, I'm usually pretty good with names, writes, "Oh, Davey." Early Friday a.m. called in on air and apologized for using the slang, and I didn't think that people would take it literally, but some people have. "Yeah, Davey," he says. "We know you're trying to be down and all. And yes, pimped out has a more benign part of the language for Chelsea's generation, but save it. All most people hear is pimping and someone's daughter, possibly the next president. You ain't winning this one."
No, he's not.
Wait, one more
okay.
Quick paragraph. "Worse, you dropped pimping while you were guest hosting on Tucker, a show hosted by a man who wears bow ties, not the right demo to drop a P-bomb." That's all I'll give you from that.
Well, that's outstanding.
So he shows up on Tucker again tonight, gets an introduction by Kelly O'Donnell, where he says, "Gosh, I'm sorry," and disappears for an unspecified amount of time because he's been suspended.
Right. Well, a couple of thoughts pop right up. Number one. Okay, MSNBC absolutely and totally raped Don Imus over his nappy-headed hoe comment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and all the people that he used to talk with regularly on that show dropped him like a hot potato.
Yes.
So they had to.
A couple of them.
Very few. Very few.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
And I think that because of that alone, they knew that they had to suspend him. And, if this thing gets legs, I could see him losing his job over it.
Yeah. And that's the part that bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no forgiveness for stupidity. And being stupid myself, it's only a matter of time before I'm going to need forgiveness.
Well, isn't that why we have the Apologia as part of the CSA podcast? We built it in because we know that we're going to use it. Is it me or does it seem to you as if a lot of times these misspeaks are around times when a commentator is trying to be quote unquote relevant or trying to be quote unquote hip? I mean, you and I have talked about Imus before. He was trying to use the vernacular of the time to make a funny comment and really got burned by it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think hip, when they're trying to be hip, is definitely true. I'm not sure that the way to be relevant is by trying to be hip, but maybe you're right.
No, you're right. It's not the way to be relevant isn't by being hip, but the way to garner, viewers is to be hip.
Yeah.
And MSNBC has, when you look at the different news networks, MSNBC has always been a little bit more cutting edge. I mean, all you had to do was look at David Gregory when he was appearing with Imus and how cutting edge he would get that show.
He was funny.
Yes, he was. But, I mean, you don't see that kind of banter, nor do you see that kind of interaction on CNN or any of the other shows.
Right. Well, Imus is a different dog entirely.
And Keith Olbermann would be another example. Right. Keith Olbermann is another example of that. He's pretty cutting edge for MSNBC.
Yes.
So I think that they're trying to appeal to that audience.
Yes.
And now they've got burned on it. To me, these two examples, though, are different from what that woman golfer said a couple of weeks ago in reference to Tiger Woods. Did you hear about that?
I did. I actually watched a tape of it. And in the context that she said it, I don't think she was thinking about lynch mobs.
No, I don't think she was either, but it was the word. It's the nappy-headed hoe, it's the pimp, it's the lynch, it's the word.
But it's just stupidity.
Well, I agree, it probably is.
Tiger said, "This woman is a friend of mine."
Right.
Which he didn't do for, what's his name, the golfer who made the fried chicken comment.
Right.
Fuzzy Zeller.
Right.
Tiger never came to his defense.
Right. He never did.
Which is part of the reason that I'm not a big fan of Tiger's, because he let poor Fuzzy hang out there in the wind, and I think it was an utterly innocent comment. I think he was talking about Southerners like he said he was.
Oh, see, now I don't buy that at all.
And honest to God,
really,
if you
don't.
Can't say fried chicken, then...
Well, it wasn't fried chicken. It was fried chicken and watermelon and everything and whatever else you guys eat is the way he put the quote. And I think that's, to me, to me, a lot of this is about intent. I don't think David Schuster is intending to say that Chelsea is being pimped.
No, he was saying Chelsea was being used.
Right. I don't think that Imus was trying to imply that the women basketball at Rutgers, the women basketball team, were a bunch of whores.
No, he was trying to say they were ugly.
Right, and I don't think that this woman narrator or whatever you want to call her, a golf show host or whatever, was trying to say that we should take Tiger and we should lynch him. I don't think she was saying that either.
No.
And so when you start looking at intent.
She was saying that the only way to stop him is to kill him.
Right. But if she had said it, you see, the whole concept is wrong. If she had said that, people would have gotten upset about that too.
Okay.
If she had come out and said, you know, so then what do you say? Well, you don't say any of those things. You say there is no way that these young golfers are going to stop Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is going to have to stop himself. And that's where you leave it.
Right.
But, I mean, you're on national TV and you're under the gun and you got a director talking in one ear and a producer talking in the other and you're trying to listen to what everybody is saying and, you know, you want to say, and maybe she even said I was going to, you know, thought I would have said hung, but I didn't want to do that either. So I said lynch.
There's an implication for that,
too. Sure. So.
But it's quip damage.
Quick, you know, damage? Is that what you said?
It's quip damage, Q-U-I-P. Oh, it's all about all about making a quip. And God knows I've done it and stuck my foot in my mouth. And I just think we should be able to say we're sorry. You know, having grown up in the Catholic Church, the best thing about it, perhaps, was confession and absolution. If you make a genuine act of contrition and you are absolved, you're golden. Now, obviously you can't say I'm sorry and get away with murder, but you should be able to say I'm sorry and get away with being stupid.
Right.
Now, in the past I've called this creeping liberalism, and I've been taken to task for it, and maybe it's not, because there certainly is – there certainly are voices on the other side that won't let you say anything, and they pounce on you for the things you do say. But
sure.
In any event, I think stupidity covers all bases.
All right. In light of this talking about stupidity and apologies, let me just say this before we go any further.
Okay.
I just looked up what Fuzzy Zeller said because I don't want to have to apologize to him next week. Okay. And so this is – right. And this is what he said. He said – so you know what you guys do when he gets back in here? You pat him on the back and say congratulations and enjoy it and tell him not to serve fried chicken next year. Got it? And as he walked away, he turned to add the famous postscript or collard greens or whatever the hell they serve. They serve. Okay.
Being Southerners, that's the way he said he meant it. And
right.
That's the way I took it.
Right.
You think that's wrong?
Well, yeah, I do, because to me it's less of a Southern thing and more of a crude, crass African-American thing.
Wow.
You know, when he said, you know, collard greens, fried chicken, or whatever the hell they serve, you know, it, to me is a little bit different. So, but again, that's me. And that's my bias about it or whatever. And I don't think it's necessarily.
I got one more comment about Fuzzy Zeller.
Sure.
I think he was trying to quip. I think he was trying to be funny.
He may have been. And I guess not that I'm changing my opinion, but I guess that I, in light of the other things that we've said tonight, maybe I can give him that stretch.
Well, and I'll give you this much. He may have reflexively used racist code in his attempt to be funny.
Right.
But I just didn't see it as malice.
Okay.
You know?
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
Anyway, what else have we got?
Well, let's go on to the Carnage Report. We had Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
And just before the election, you had John Edwards going. And then in a surprise move, I thought, Mitt Romney dropped out. He dropped out faster than a, I don't know what. I mean, I was seeing news reports that said that he was gung-ho and he was sticking in the race, and then all of a sudden he turned around and he left. I mean, his supporters were nuts about that.
Did you see the comments he made yesterday? Jon Stewart had a field day with them.
Uh-huh. I did not.
And, oh, he said, for the good of the country.
Yes, I did see that, yes.
You know, yeah. And then he went into the whole thing about what we need is more religion, and then Jon Stewart nailed him on the thing saying that the problem with these people, meaning the Muslim terrorists, is they right. have too much religion.
Right. And, but we need more. Sure. Oh, no, that's, you know. It strikes me as, you know, I know that we've talked in the podcast before about two things. One is about that Huckabee rumor that Huckabee was just staying in to kind of, you know, help McCain.
Yeah.
And then the other part is about your friend's son who had that whole political boxing out thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that this is, you know, that this is almost a natural boxing out thing that Huckabee is doing. I mean, I think you can make a real strong argument for that's exactly what he's doing. He knows what he's doing.
Well, I would say that McCain is boxing out here.
Well, I think Huckabee is, too. I agree. McCain is, absolutely.
Because, no, I'm not sure I agree with that Huckabee is boxing out anyone. He's in a right-hand party. He's moved to the right. He's established himself as the right. McCain is going for the center.
Right.
Thinking that everything right is going to go to him anyway in the national right. election.
Well, I guess what I saw is that Huckabee's even righter than Mitt.
Right, but the thing about boxing
and,
out is
and so know. Right, but to me it's almost like a squeeze play that you have very rarely do you have people that are going to fall right in the middle where Mitt Romney is. They're either going to be on one end of the spectrum or they're going to be on the other.
Yeah.
And what plays through this is the fact that if McCain now chooses Huckabee to be his running mate, he captures the whole line. Because yeah. you'll have the people who are dissatisfied with McCain's liberalism who will say, well, at least he has Huckabee. Huckabee will
right.
cool him down a bit. And people who are disenchanted with Huckabee will look at it and say, well, at least McCain would be the president. He's a lot more liberal. He's a compassionate conservative, whatever you want to call him. And so that'll, you know, that'll kind of even out the party a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. Putting Huckabee on the ticket would smooth over feathers with the right. There was a comment from McCain recently. I think it was yesterday, and I believe he said something on the order of, I think the hardliners, and it's, that's my term, not his, should just calm down a little bit, I think is an exact quote.
Right.
Well, Laura Ingraham, who is a radio commentator.
Sure.
And unlike Ann Coulter, who is a nut job, Laura Ingraham is actually a smart person.
Right.
And really flat gorgeous, too. But that's irrelevant to this debate. But me being a...
It's never irrelevant.
But Ann Coulter got up on her high horse and pretty much said, how dare you tell me to calm down?
Right.
And apparently he's pissed off the right even more. And when I heard him, I thought, well, that's wise, you know. But where else is Ann Coulter going to go in the voting booth except to John McCain?
Right.
Now, they're saying Tom DeLay. Tom fucking DeLay said, I don't know that I wouldn't rather vote for Hillary Clinton, or words to that effect. When put on the spot by Chris Matthews, are you going to vote for McCain? DeLay said, I don't know.
Well, that's interesting because that leads me into the Rush Limbaugh story.
Okay.
And also leads me into a discussion that I wanted to have with you concerning voting.
Okay.
Now, in two different – as most people who might be listening to this know, Rush Limbaugh has a ultra-conservative talk show on – well, just all over the place, obviously.
Yeah, he's everywhere.
And he's everywhere. And this past week, he has raised the hackles of the Republican Party with two comments that he made.
Huh.
The first comment was that he could not see himself voting for McCain and that he might vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And then the second comment he made was he wanted to start a campaign to raise money for Hillary Clinton because he felt that McCain could beat Clinton but may not be able to beat Barack Obama.
Well, that's
and
the
so
way.
Therefore he wants to raise money for Hillary so she beats Obama so that Clinton will run against McCain and lose to McCain. And yeah. So this to me this raised a very, very interesting issue, and it made me think about voting in general and how probably from 1960 or so, the American people started to vote for when they voted for Kennedy, they started to vote for looks and the most popular person.
Yeah.
You know, there was a kind of shift. Up until that point, a lot of elections.
My friend used to say that since Kennedy, America has always voted for the tallest candidate.
Right. Or the most good looking or you know, it just happens that way, I guess. Or
well,
it has been happening that way.
There are subtle psychological influences going on there, and
right.
One of them is, can I see this person as my president?
Right. And what the things that Rush Limbaugh said made me start to think about the whole political process in general. When I was thinking about who to vote for on Super Tuesday, I had a real dilemma because I was an Edwards supporter, and I felt that neither Clinton nor Barack Obama fit what I saw in Edwards.
Right.
But that having been said, in order for my vote to count the most, should I be voting for the person who best represents my own personal view, or should I be voting for the person who is going to get into the White House and change the Republican agenda?
Well,
and there's a difference there.
There's another question there, which I thought you were going to, which is, should I vote for the person who I think can beat the opposition, the tactical
right.
vote?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, all right. Yeah,
And if you want to keep it in Rush Limbaugh's terms, should I vote for Barack Obama because he is closer to where I saw Edwards, or should I vote for Hillary Clinton because she will beat McCain?
Right.
And I don't have an answer for that.
Well, here's my thoughts on that. I believe many people – I haven't thought about it a lot yet, but I'm thinking the majority of people in both parties are now voting – strategically, or using strategery, as if you will.
Right. I agree. Strategery.
I believe that John McCain is winning specifically because the majority of Republicans feel that he is their best shot to defeat Hillary, whom they hate for what reason I can't figure out. But I personally voted using strategery last time by going for John McCain, who never charmed me, but I felt a war hero would be the best candidate to run against the warmongers. Now, the problem with that was the genius of Karl Rove. There's an article about him in the Atlantic Monthly a couple of years ago, I can't give you the date and the time, that said that the genius of Karl Rove is that he attacks a candidate on their strength. And it happened perfectly with the Swift boats. If you take away John McCain as a war hero, you got nothing.
Right.
And if you take away Hillary Clinton is a liberal,
you got nothing.
You got nothing. You know, right. Hillary Clinton, the Republicans have said it. John McCain's not that different on the Bush tax cuts. Now, my problem with McCain is twofold. First of all, his straight talk express is no longer true because he's changed his positions on being pro-life, on Bush tax cuts, on some other issue that I can't.
And that's the boxing out.
Right. Right. Yep. Yeah. Actually, that's a little bit different because now he's gone back to the right because he was pulled that way by Huckabee. Those are right-wing issues, and he's now in favor of them. He's given up his fight for illegal immigrants, which I think was a principled position, but he had to go to the right. It's kind of like more boxing in.
Right. Wasn't there a time recently, well, not recently, but a few years ago, when McCain was talking about changing to a Democrat?
He was thinking, I think, about running as an independent. In fact, I believe John Kerry asked him to be his running mate.
Right.
And McCain, one of the things that are fundamentally true about him, and here's the broader point, is when you look at a candidate, you ask yourself, what is fundamentally true about them?
Right.
And my problem with Hillary is, I don't know. What I know about McCain is that is fundamentally true is he is a loyalist. It's the only way he could have stayed in the Republican Party and backed George Bush after the shit that George Bush did to him during the primaries.
Right.
McCain is loyal. He's a good soldier. Hillary is, I guess, behind it all from her earliest job experience. She truly was for women's rights and for children's rights. And God love her, yay, let's go. You know, I think there's something there. But what I've seen from her in the campaign is actually classic Bill Clinton. It's what I call stepping in front of an issue. She says, right. I'm the agent of change now. Bill did it too. I can't remember his issue. It might have been
blowjobs.
He stepped in front of that, didn't he?
That's what she said. Yep.
So
we take the high road.
She's using his strategy or his tactic, I guess it should be in this case. Oh, that's another issue we got to get into. I got the TV on mute in the background. Some branch of the government has just come out, and I'm changing the subject. Do you want to finish up on?
Well, no. I think we're, you know, I think we beat that horse pretty good.
All right.
Let's move on.
It has come out recently, this is apropos of nothing, that the United States has admitted that it has waterboarded prisoners now, but that it doesn't believe that it's torture. Did you see that?
Right. No, I didn't see that.
Because we prosecuted people for waterboarding people
in the past.
Right.
So, is that just simply another semantic example of changing airline crashes to unscheduled termination of flight?
Exactly.
You know, it's just it's a semantic, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and I think it was you that said the reason that all of those thousands of prisoners came to us in the first Gulf War was they knew that they would be treated humanely. America had a great reputation, and it served us, and it served our soldiers well. And now we just come out and admitted we torture people, but we're just not calling it torture.
Right.
And I think that's a devastating impact in our standing around the world and is an imminent and immediate threat to our soldiers and is wrong.
You know, I think that whoever the next president is going to have to spend a lot of time repairing our
image abroad.
Image abroad, yeah.
And I think whoever's left between McCain, Hillary, and Obama will reject torture as a tactic and a strategy. And hopefully we'll come out with a law that says, or a statement or a policy that says clearly, this is torture and we're not doing it anymore. Forever. Sorry, I think I ranted again.
Well, that might have been. I prefer to call it commentary, I think.
Yeah, I was an unintended commentary, but I just saw some image that made me think of it. But my own personal feeling is the greatest chance that we have to raise the image of America around the world the most quickly is by hiring Barack Obama. And I also think he's fucking smart.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you're right.
I have a feeling that Hillary is really smart too.
The problem with that, and this gets back to our original argument, is that I'm not sure that Barack Obama can beat John McCain.
Well, according to today's poll, just now I saw it, Hillary versus McCain is 46-46. Obama versus McCain. Yeah. Is 48-41 in favor of Obama.
Right.
He gets 7 points more than her, and it was 6 last week in the same comparison. If you're voting by strategy, I think you have to vote for Obama as a Democrat.
Well, I mean that ultimately that's that Rush Limbaugh question, and that's what kind of threw me into a tizzy this past week. You know, the question is, do you vote with your heart or your head, or do you vote for the overall change? I mean, my problem or my issue is not specific to whoever is running. My issue is that I think that the Republican agenda sucks, and I think that they've done enough damage and it's time to make a change.
Oh yeah.
I think it's a time to, you know, and I think that maybe some people would call this blasphemous, but personally, I'm not sure that whether it's Hillary, Barack, John Edwards, or whoever, I just think that having a different party is going to bring a different agenda. And even if I don't agree with all of the agenda items, I agree with the agenda philosophy.
Well, I agree with that. But I also felt up until this last month or so of campaign that was true of McCain as well. That he couldn't stand, like a lot of Republicans, would just hold his nose at the idea of the rest of this term. That there were so many things that were so wrong in this term that McCain would be an improvement, a vast improvement. But he's now gone back and he's embraced the Bush tax cuts, which are absurd to me. You just can't give more money to the rich. The redistribution of wealth in this country, I wish I had the numbers. Someday I'm going to come up with the numbers. I have seen them in the past after Reagan, and it, I'm sure, is worse now. It's staggering and it's offensive. And now he's backed away from his pledge or his efforts to treat illegal immigrants like human beings. And he's gone away from his independent stature, and I feel he's diminished for it. But I do think that the thing that McCain can do for the Republicans that they know by voting is to find the middle, to grab some independents. And the thing that Obama can do is take the independence back.
Right. I don't know much about Huckabee because, as I've said to you before, because of his evangelical bent, he always scared the crap out of me, and I just didn't, you know, I just wasn't interested in his ultra-conservatism. But did I say recently something about that he was in favor of the flat tax?
No, he has a proposal that he calls the fair tax.
Okay.
And that it involves disbanding the IRS entirely.
Right.
And giving rebates to the poorest people, but taxing everyone's consumption.
So you would have no income tax, but you would have sales tax.
National sales tax. And he said to generate the same amount of income. And I read the thing on his webpage about it, and it's thoughtful, and it's different, and it bears some scrutiny. I think he's a smart guy. I like him. I just can't vote for somebody
around that. Yeah.
Puts Jesus in front of everything.
Right.
And I'm not saying that Jesus shouldn't be in front of everything. If you love Jesus, God bless you. But it doesn't need to be in our politics. It doesn't.
It shouldn't be in our politics.
It needs to be out of our politics, just the same as if Muhammad were the candidate's spiritual target and somebody tried to put Muhammad in front of their politics. Americans would reject it. They would reject John Smith or,
sure.
You know.
Or Mitt Romney.
Well, and that's the problem that Mitt Romney had is he couldn't prove to the Christians that he was a Christian because his faith is based on some wacky notions. And that didn't
sure.
leave a lot among conservatives. This is why I think Huckabee still has a tiny sliver of a chance, because the conservatives truly passionately hate McCain. And this guy Dobson, who I know very little about but seems to have an enormous amount of influence, has backed Huckabee. He seems to speak for all of the vast majority of the evangelicals. And I think if it were between McCain and Huckabee from the get-go right now, Huckabee would win.
Do you know what Huckabee wanted to set the national sales tax rate at?
I don't know. But I bet it's on his webpage.
To me, it's just an interesting proposition.
With consumption taxes, as my old friend Dave Westgate would say, is it's inherently fair. It taxes the poor for their hamburger just as much as it taxes the rich. And the poor get just the same opportunity to sleep under a bridge as the rich do. But they're the only ones that are going to sleep under a bridge. I'm very, very afraid of a national sales tax because it will impact the poor more directly. It's going to be a greater percentage of their income.
Right.
The rich get to live off their savings.
Whereas at least a flat tax, the way I understood that, would be that based on how much your income was, it set a specific rate. And so that you could set the poorest of the poor at the lowest possible rate.
No.
And this is
why Dave says, you don't believe in a flat tax. He says it to everyone, and I can prove it. He said, should we tax poor people? And most kind-hearted, good-thinking Americans say no. If you're below the poverty line, you shouldn't pay tax. Dave says, all right, so we now have two standards. Now we're only squabbling about how many levels of gradation
right.
of taxation do you have? You know, do you tax the working poor? Do you tax the lower middle class? You know, where do you start asking people for money to run the government? If you can't afford a car to get to work, do you still have to pay your 14%? And I think that's about what it works out to, 14-17%.
Right.
If everybody paid a flat tax. And nobody wants to crush the poorest of the poor.
Right.
So,
well, you know what this is pointing at,
what?
Max? This is pointing at our our April 15th tax day extravaganza.
We need a tax extravaganza.
I think that's where we're headed.
I
think we should plan on you know, doing a little bit of research and talking about flat tax, fair tax, whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
What is the, I mean.
We could call it a tax extravaganza.
Taxtravaganza. And this is great because I live in Taxachusetts.
I
would be interested in how much Huckabee thinks that we would save by getting rid of the IRS. I mean, what is the IRS's budget?
The cost for maintaining the IRS? It's huge. It's a big amount, and there is a savings there. Just like there would be a savings if we got rid of all of the insurance paper pushers in a one-payer national health care system.
Right.
You know, the doctors send the bills, and the people pay it, and the government pays it. There is a huge layer of bureaucracy in managing medical payments.
Right. Automatically sets up, you know, who the people in Washington who will be fighting that would be.
Insurance companies.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure. They'll be lining up for blocks.
How are we doing on time here?
We're doing okay. I texted you a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
We're at the 40-minute mark, so we got plenty of time left in the extravaganza.
Are we doing an extravaganza today?
Today's the extravaganza, isn't it? The Super Tuesday extravaganza?
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's the booth boy is out partying and the podcast boys.
The podcast runs along.
Right, the podcast boy, yeah, when the mice are alone.
Yes.
When the cat's alone, the mice play, right?
Right.
If he doesn't want us to do a 45-minute or an hour show, then be here, damn it. Let's change gears. Let's get to News of the Weird. I know that you had some News of the Weird things. I got one right off the bat, one that wasn't in your list, which I just found to be – it's one of those one-comment wonders. Okay, this is from Fox News, although it's from the one of the news services. Okay, an Indiana woman was arrested on Wednesday on charges that she gave her 11-year-old daughter alcohol and marijuana as a birthday gift.
11?
11. 26-year-old woman from Anderson, Indiana, was charged with one count of contributing to the delinquency of a minor after the cops alleged she offered beer and pot to her daughter and three of her daughter's friends during a birthday party.
Wow. Go ahead.
My favorite for the whole story is the woman's explanation. And this is it. Fuller told the police that she was smoking pot and drinking beer with her adult friends, but she denied giving them to her daughter.
Okay.
So, you know, all I can say is, where were people like this when I was 11 years old? You know, it's the same reaction I have when you see one of those things where some hot blonde teacher is having sex with a 14-year-old.
16-year-old.
Right. And all I can say is, where were those teachers when I was in the seventh grade?
Yep.
I just don't get it.
You know, that's absolutely true. Most of the guys I think that I've talked to, most of the guys I know, including myself, at least in high school, would have been perfectly happy if Miss Vavra had, you know, kept us after school.
Offered you pot, gave you beer, and had sex with you. I mean, come on.
I know it's wrong. There's a part of my brain that says you have to be against this. But there's a part of my brain that says if I was 17, I'd want to be the kid, you know.
Why not?
I know I had a crush on my eighth grade teacher, like I wouldn't believe.
I had the same on a seventh and teacher that I had in the seventh and eighth grade. I had her 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah, but mine was a nun.
And she was better the second year.
Better at what?
Better looking. I just remember it as being.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know what the difference was. But
yeah, you know, my junior year English teacher, well, let's just say all the boys sat up front. And I didn't mean that as a double entendre, but
I know, but you did. I did. It came across that way, and I love it.
Sorry.
So what other news of the weird do you got?
In October, Syracuse, New York dentist George Trusty was sued in federal court after a drill bit snapped off and lodged near a patient's eye, allegedly because Trusty was dancing to the song Car Wash on the radio while tending to the patient.
That's so I got this image. I got this image of this white smock guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's got all the disco moves.
Oh, you can see it. Absolutely.
I can see it in my head. Snap goes the drill, sticks in the lady's eye.
Oh, man. I'm going to a new dentist in in a couple of weeks. And if I hear Car Wash, I'm leaving.
I tell you, could you sue the dentist and the radio station that was playing the song?
Earth, Wind, and Fire, or whoever that was.
Right, yeah.
No, I don't think you could.
Man.
Let's see. What else have we got good here? I don't know about the licking the toes. That's not that interesting on second look.
I thought that was pretty bizarre myself.
Yeah. I like this one. According to police in Honolulu in January, it was Ellis Cleveland who robbed four banks within a five-day span, and that's what an officer said to him as they arrested him. Responded Cleveland, four? I didn't do four. I only robbed three banks. But it doesn't matter because I'm not talking to you guys. That in itself is bad enough. I want a lawyer. Police later said that Cleveland was not counting an attempted robbery on December 31st of the Bank of Hawaii because after three different tellers tried unsuccessfully to decipher his holdup notice, Cleveland gave up and walked out empty-handed. Just saying.
So he didn't think he was robbed. He didn't try to rob him
because they couldn't read his handwriting.
Right. He couldn't read his handwriting, so that doesn't count as a robbery.
Right.
You might know you're a redneck if you try to rob a bank and
you can't. Your handwriting can't be read.
Yeah.
Illegible, I think, is the term I was looking for.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that was weird, huh? That is weird.
I kind of like this Texas Police Department one where Officer Lando was paying for services of a prostitute, but part of his payment was to give the woman free rein over his wife's closet, saying that she would never miss some of the items. Now, what's going to make that woman more angry? That her husband was cheating on her? That he was cheating on her with a prostitute? Or that he was giving the prostitute her clothes?
Her clothes.
This one, I think, is really... It's just... weird. I guess is all I can come up with. Political campaign strategies. Lee Myung-bak was elected president of South Korea in December, perhaps attributable in part to his organization's spraying a sharp fragrance they call Great Korea in the air at campaign events and then on election day at polling places, hoping for an olfactory influence on undecided voters. Ah, walk this way and enjoy the Great Korea. I think that might be clever. It wouldn't surprise me if somewhere in the United States that's used during the next campaign cycle. Maybe this one.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
And the last things we have are places where people have seen the face of Jesus. Marion County, Florida, on a slice of raw potato. That was this year. On a slab of granite in Tampa, Florida. In Houston, another slice of raw potato. Image of Jesus on a wall covering last year. Image of Jesus on a chest x-ray. That's a little weird. What part of your...
I actually saw that x-ray, by the way.
Yeah, did you see Jesus?
Well, you know, I saw something. I'm not sure that I would have said it was Jesus. I kind of thought of it as a
hippie.
No, I saw of it as somebody from Middle East descent or something.
You could see a face.
There's a word for that, about what your mind does when it kind of fills in the blanks.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't remember the word.
And I don't know what the word is. If Research Girl was around, I'm sure I could ask her to figure it out.
We're totally unaided here. You know,
and
that reminds me, there's a recent spotting of Bigfoot on Mars.
You know what? I'm looking at, right as we speak, I'm looking at the article about that from Dig. And the reason I'm doing that is because in the comment section, somebody mentioned that word and, you know, said that it, you know, that's what this is doing. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of, I can't think of what it is. And I'm looking through the comments just quickly while I'm talking to you, and I have not run across.
You know where you can find this out, that, and Boy will hate me for this, but if you listen to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, Dr. Steve talks about it all the time, and he talked about it in reference to this particular event. People look at this particular rock formation, and they see Bigfoot. And it turns out that the thing is like an eighth of an inch high.
Right.
But if you have no proportional reference, it looks like big.
You don't know how big it is, right?
Have you seen the face on the moon? No, I think it's Mars.
Yeah. I haven't seen the face on Mars.
There's a famous photograph of an image of a human face, and it really looks kind of like a human face, like a pyramid kind of a construction. And it's just the way the rocks fell and the wind blew.
Right.
But until we sent up the...
Well, the mind is a wonderful thing.
It's a terrible thing to have lost one's mind, you know, or important. To have never had a mind at all. How true that is.
Right. that's very, very similar to that thing about where they leave the letters out of words and you read it and you're able to understand the whole message. Even though a third of the letters or half the letters are actually missing because you see three letters, you add the fourth and the fifth and turn it into a word.
I've heard that we read once we become, you know, regular readers, that we read the shapes of the words. And not the letters. We don't read phonetically anymore. They're showing water torture now, waterboarding.
Oh.
Can't get enough of that. Back to Jesus for a second. Somebody in Virginia saw an image of Jesus in a smudge of driveway sealant last August. Just threw that out. Also... on a cabinet door, and also on a backyard fence. The interesting thing is almost all of these are from the South. The Jesus on the cabinet door is from Connecticut, and Jesus on the backyard fence is from California, and all the rest of them are from the South. You may not think that's relevant, I do.
Are you making a comment that we will need to apologize for next week?
That people in the South are more likely to see Jesus than the rest of us. Do I need to apologize for that?
Well, no, because you know people from the South are more likely to vote for Mike Huckabee
too.
They
may see.
So I wonder if there's an actual
Jesus
connection.
In Mike Huckabee.
Do they see Jesus in Mike Huckabee?
You know, I like Mike Huckabee. I have to tell you. Just, I like him. I think he's charming. I think he's a lunatic, but I think he's charming. And he's smart, too, which is, this is a lot of things to say about somebody.
Right. Well, you know, in your blog, you say, well, actually, but probably it isn't in your blog, but in conversations with you, you have that whole theory about when people tell you you're smart.
Yeah.
And if you say it more than, when you say it more than three times. Well, I might ask Booth Boy to do a count, but I think you said Mike Huckabee's smart about nine times.
Yeah, I was thinking about that little piece I wrote in my blog, and I like it. I really do think it's true. If somebody tells you more than three times in a conversation that you're smart, they're saying something else.
That may be one of my favorite comments of yours. you know, and I don't even know if you actually came up with that yourself or if that's borrowed from somebody else. That's because you're smart. You're right. Because, I mean, it is absolutely true. What? And you know what? It probably applies to other things, too. If somebody says, that you've got a good personality more than three times in a conversation, they're probably saying something else, you know? And I mean, we've all heard that, you know, you send somebody on a blind date and they say, well, is she good looking? And you say, well, she's got a good personality. Yeah. You know, so if somebody says that, it might be an extension of the CSA Scaly thing.
The rule of threes there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's part of that.
We haven't touched on the CSA Scaly thing in a while.
We just haven't had the time. We should probably plan a Scaly thingy extravaganza.
We should put a Scaly baganza.
A Scaly baganza. See, that's the problem. And Booth Boy is just going to have to understand it. 30 minutes is just not enough time for us. I mean, we need, and I can see him. He's already, he's sitting in his car right now driving, and he's got this crick in his, neck. And he's like, Joe, I wonder where that came from. Came from your dad, son. At 8:32 on Friday night, I said that you're going to be rolling over with this one. And it's, you know, it's what it is. I mean, when we had the hour show in the beginning of the podcast, experience, we had enough time to do this stuff. But when we tried to cut it back to be hip and with it and stuff, you know, we pimped ourselves. and now we get 30 minutes and we don't rush through it, but we run through it. And we always have these other things that, I mean, we have our best conversations after we finish the podcast. The podcast is over and we just talk and we touch on 19 other different subjects.
I think we should be lynched by a bunch of nappy-headed hosts.
Could be. I'd like some fried chicken for my last meal, though.
Yeah, I think
so. In the spirit of touching on things that you have said, I just wanted to take this opportunity to give you specifically a pat on your back related to
my predictions
blog of January 24th, 15 days ago.
It's www.8minutesonhigh.com.
Like the baking potatoes in a microwave, 8minutesonhigh.com. Well, back on January 24th, some 15 days ago, Max wrote an I predict column that were real predictions that he was making, and he wanted to eventually
compare myself with a psychic,
with a real psychic. And he had a list of 17. And at last count, I believe you've hit 6 already in 15 days. Just to remind people, I know that you read them in the podcast, so I'm not going to read them all, but I am going to read the ones that you did predict correctly. Number one, you said the Giants were going to win the Super Bowl. Check. You got that one. Number three, Britney Spears will do something outrageous at a desperate attempt to gain attention. She is back in rehab. Okay, where are we? Number 10, the writer's strike will end. I just saw that today.
Genius.
That's three. Number 12, there will be a major national disaster in the U.S. George Bush will visit the location. Fox News will show President Bush viewing the damage and saying compassionate things. Today, George Bush visited Arkansas and Tennessee, the site of the tornadoes this past week, and the news report was titled Sympathy and Support. Those are compassionate things.
Who could have imagined?
That's four that you hit. Number 15, tornadoes will strike in the Midwest. Again.
I'm a genius.
I tell you, you're a smart guy there, Steve. So you did hit it. Now, for people who might doubt the veracity of the number one prediction about the Giants and the Super Bowl, podcast number 11, the Super Bowl Extravaganza, will probably be up on the website tomorrow.
People are going to have to actually
think and in it
that we recorded that beforehand.
Well, yeah. Well, we say the date in the beginning, so they'll hear it. The date was Friday the 1st of February, and in that show we had a live phone call with the Manhattan Man, who was actually in Phoenix at the site of the Super Bowl. He was going.
I think they really played the
he was
game,
going to the
or
Super
was
Bowl.
It just a virtual Super Bowl on the webpage of the University of Phoenix?
Sort of like the Mars landing. Oh, the University of Phoenix. Either one. Well, anyway, during that podcast, Manhattan Man asked you and I what our picks in the Super Bowl was. And you came right out and said that the Giants were going to win. I said that I would take the Giants and the points, but I don't think
they're
I ever said
outright.
The Giants will win the game. And when I was talking with Booth Boy after the fact. And I have this in my – and it's one of these things that I've always had, even when I was a young kid growing up. I have this karma thing. And some people would say that it's superstition, but it's not – to me, it's not superstition. It's about karma.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you a story. When I was talking to you about the Super Bowl, I told you that we were thinking about getting a new TV, a big screen TV. But I ultimately decided not to get that for the Super Bowl. And the reason I did was because we had watched the first three games of the playoffs on our regular TV. And I was afraid that buying a new TV would upset the karma. And every playoff game, Booth Boy and I sat down with lime-flavored nacho chips and chili con queso.
Sounds
to dip it in.
Superstitious to me.
And again, to me, that was more superstitious. But where it's not superstitious is the fact that it wasn't the same brand of lime chips, nor was the same chili con queso. But it was the thought. It was the karma. Well, one of my karma things is I would never, ever say, like, for example, when Manning threw the touchdown pass at the end of the game to Burris, I would not say to anybody, the game is over. The Giants just won.
You don't say that
when there's right. 30 seconds left.
Especially if you're a Giants
fan. Well, I did say that kind of I did say that kind of thing one time. All right? And you're going to know when I tell you the story. This is an honest-to-God, absolute true story. 2004. Yankee postseason, game three of the American League Championship Series against the Red Sox. It was Saturday. It was Saturday night. Mrs. Penguin, the publicity princess, and I were attending a knitting fair in upstate New York.
That's the royal husband right there.
I ran back to the hotel. Right. I ran back to the hotel to watch the game. The Yankees proceeded to beat the crap out of the Red Sox. Early in the game, I called Booth Boy on the cell phone, and I said to him, "This is great. The Yankees are kicking their butts." And about the middle of the game, I called him back up, and I said, "This is great. The Yankees are killing the Red Sox." And about the seventh or eighth inning, I called Booth Boy up, and I said, "You know, I'm really feeling sorry for the Red Sox because the Yankees have this series all wrapped up. There's no way that the Red Sox are going to come back from it."
Oh, yeah.
And they did.
And I knew
And I just
– I'm smart that if ever there was a time to break the curse, it would be against the Yankees. It would be the greatest comeback in playoff history. And just to add suspense and drama, the star player would be injured but come out and play anyway. It was perfect for the greatest story in baseball history, and I felt bad about it. And I heard John what's the guy's name? I can't think. Sterling. I wanted to say Stewart. Don Sterling saying, "This one is over." And I said, "Don't say that. Don't say that. Please don't say that." And they did.
And they did.
And of course, I blame John Sterling because he said it on the air, which is much worse.
Right. But it was really my fault because I said it. And I regretted saying it almost immediately.
You've done a lot of damage to the Yankee franchise. Because they haven't won since then, you know.
I know, I know.
There may have to be some.
I know. It's sort of like
karmic makeup in your future somewhere. Some karmic forgiveness.
Right. Well, we might have gotten the karmic makeup last Sunday. There was a news report tonight. I was watching the news before we started the podcast, and the commentator said, "I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but the Patriots lost the Super Bowl on Sunday to the New York Giants, and we have not seen the sun in Massachusetts since then." And it's true. We had rain or snow or overcast Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and today again.
Yeah, it's bad down here.
And so we have not seen the sun. And, you know, I think that might be a cause.
Or is it an effect?
The other funniest comment that I saw was somebody saying that if Obama were able to beat Hillary, that perhaps he could celebrate by purchasing all the champagne that the Patriots had bought for the Super Bowl. Which I thought was was a pretty funny.
Yeah,
funny
but it snaps a little bit of too much confidence. And those of us scientific thinkers know that if you have too much confidence, the universe will get you.
You're screwed. Right. So I'm looking over your I predict list, and of the 17, I only see one that's not going to happen. That's the marrying Scarlett Johansson.
Hey, you're still young, you know?
I know it is, but I would think that if you were gonna marry her by the end of the year, I would have think that you should have gone out on a date or two since you started.
Myself?
Yeah, probably it would be a good idea. She knows who she's marrying.
Beginning of February, we got time. Scarlett, if you're out there, call me, babe.
Well, listen, we have just about tapped out the extravaganza.
We did put a little extra in our organza today.
We did. We're almost 66, 67 minutes.
We could do,
and that's
rather just kind of put them on the shelf. And
we'll save them. Yeah, we'll pick them up next time. We're always looking for things to do. We definitely got to do Perfect Pair.
Yeah, I want to do that.
For sure.
I want to be Scarlett Dead, no Dead, Not Dead Again.
Right. Oh, that would be a fun thing to do. So let's plan on plan on doing that next time. All right. So listen, thanks to 8-Beer Productions for nothing. 8-Beer Sample Productions with no help again tonight. No research girl, no publicity princess, no booth boy.
Not even a call in tonight. We were left on our own.
And damn it, we did a fine job.
this is Max Simon.
All right, this is the Penguin saying goodnight to everybody, and we will catch you next week.
I'm not your only friend, but I'm a little glowing friend. But really, I'm not actually your friend, but I am. There's a picture opposite me of my primitive ancestry, which stood on rocky shores and kept the beaches shipwreck free. Though I respect that a lot, I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason off and countless screaming Argonauts, new bird of friendliness, like guardian angels, it's always near. New canary in the outlet by the light switch, who watches over you? Make a little birdhouse in your soul, not to put too fine a bond on it. Say I'm the only bee. To put too fine upon us.